sultanism and theocracy. And the anger of the Lord continued to kindle against Israel, and he stirred up David against them. Go, count Israel and Judah. 2 Samuel 24, verse 1. It is a daring stroke of scripture when it says in one breath that Satan stirred David and that the Lord did it. Is this, as was once said, the consequence of a twofold notion of God, a lower one and a higher one? No, it is not. It rather is a revelation of the truth that in the wickedness of David, God himself is not inactive, that he also is involved in that. Evil does not happen outside the will of God. Thus the sin itself already included a judgment. The ideal of David once in a while threatened to become sultanic. So the next sin became a judgment about the previous one. Thus God allowed the sin of counting the people to collide with God and with the sin itself. For in this, the judgment is defined concretely and also clearly in the announcement of the actual formulations of the conflict between theocracy and sultanism. On this point, light broke through the darkness. The plague was judgment. The darkness was a fear around them. But God allowed matters to come to the counting of the people. That means that he distinctly revealed the terms of the conflict. Thus people could see what was happening. A powerful military state is something different than the theocratic state of righteousness, and a strong warrior to the outside world is not yet a servant inside the state. That was the light, the theocratic light. God revealed that grace was at stake. Indeed, theocracy prevailed over Satanism. Do you ask for proof of this? Just pay attention to the results. Soon the Sultan saw again the image of his Lord, the sovereign Lord of the theocratic community. David was saved because the Lord actively intervened in the sin of this wicked plot of Satan. Indeed, David later saw and acknowledged God's grace in his judgment. It was grace that he was allowed to choose one of three punishments. And David accepted that grace in its absolute form. Please, do not let me fall into the hands of men, but into the hand of the Lord. And what happened when after this the people had to share in the punishment of the king? Then David did not reason, as would indeed have been quite well possible for him, that the people themselves did not exist on their own, and that the transgression of the king was also that of the people. For even though that way of reasoning would have been correct, David pleaded for mercy for the sheep, and requested that instead the unfaithful shepherd should suffer, so that the sheep would be allowed to go free. And soon David built an altar for a sacrifice of atonement. But the plot of ground that he needed for that, he did not want to expropriate high-handedly, even though that was made easy for him by the owner of the land, who was willing to donate it. No, the king wanted to pay, even to the last penny, for the plot of the altar, and also for everything needed for the sacrifice. High-handedness had to be broken. The one who collected taxes paid, for he owed it to the Lord and the people. Later, the temple, which for many generations did become the meeting place of God with his people in the covenant, would be built on this exact location. And it is indeed very striking that in Psalm 16, which, as was mentioned before, may be considered to have been composed at this time, the introduction of the song reveals a twofold position. David said to the Lord, "For me there is no possession above thee." And in regards to his people, he speaks the beautiful words, "I have said to the saints who are in the land that they are the glorious ones in whom is all my delight." Footnote: this translation is based on the Dutch rendering of Professor M. Noordzee, accepted by Professor Dr. A. Noordzee. Here it is no longer so that the glory of his people exalted in the first place the greatness and power of David's joy upon which holiness would follow in the second place as a memorial. No, the reverse is true. The holiness of Israel gave a name to the people and the covenant community. And only in this holiness David now realized the glory of the theocratic community. Thus it was the Lord himself who had intervened by his own hand in the attack of Satan on the theocratic kingship. Let us now shudder about the judgment and be thankful for the establishment of grace in that judgment. For in regards to the first, it was indeed judgment, a visitation, a forsaking, when the Lord stirred David in and by Satan. Such a judgment still comes over everyone who, although born and placed in office in a theocracy, separates power from justice, allowance from obligation, and domination from service. But when grace comes along in that judgment, we will also give thanks for that. For that sin itself is against God's will remains its terribleness. For that it never happens outside of God's will opens the eyes for the light of a future which restores itself in an emerging of grace. Why? And how? Because God himself, as the canons of Dort say somewhere, will bring his people back by depriving them of a sensing of grace. By faith he will bring them back to that grace, which was not lost, though for a short time they lacked the sensing of it, because of their own guilt. Yes, indeed, it affects us. Do we not also live in the theocracy? Is the Church of the New Testament not indeed the continuation of what gave Israel its actual character? Thus also today the theocracy will be immediately corrupted when a single person turns his back to the community, when someone's brute desire for his self-development renounces the duty of submitting himself to the constitution of the people that was established on the basis of Christ's blood. But when Christ maintains his church, and when this king of theocracy still actively intervenes in the errors of his people, then hell may rage unconstrainedly, but Sultanism will not be brought by Satanism to the height of evil. Indeed, the old man of Sultanism will die off at the right time by the strength of the theocratic son. Then the new man will honor the church as the community of saints of God's true government. The holy ones are then the glorious ones to the new man. And besides this glory, he will desire none upon the earth, and neither does he know beside her any in heaven.